Radio Santa Cruz, this is the Queen of Caffeine, and we're educating the masses.
And coming up next on Free Radio Santa Cruz, it's the June 21st, 2018 edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides. Going to be listening to a report from Fresno, California, from activist Mike Rhodes. Haven't heard from him for a while. Fresno had a camping ban that went into effect, and Mike is dealing with some serious health problems, and he's also involved with lots of other issues, checking him out. We'll also be following up, of course, on the ongoing campaign to free the bathrooms, that is to say, to unlock the Parks and Rec bathrooms at Loudoun Nelson and at San Lorenzo Park. Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, has called for additionally opening up the other bathrooms in other parks, not just during the day, but at night as well. There are no 24-hour bathrooms at night in Santa Cruz. We did a protest last Thursday, a week ago, at the Parks and Rec Department, some of us under the coalition group Conscience and Action. I've been calling it Conscience in Action, but perhaps the initials of that are a little too reminiscent of one of our more notorious national organizations, you know, CIA, that sort of thing. There's also, of course, a plan for a continuation of these protests. I believe there's going to be a meeting tomorrow to organize it at 10:30 at the Sub Rosa Cafe for those interested in checking in to help make signs, plans, and so forth. The actual protest itself will be next Thursday at, if you stay tuned to the show, you'll learn lots more details about it, including kind of a pre-protest protest that's going to be happening on Saturday in front of the post office. So stay tuned.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So on Sunday's show, I was playing some of the audio of the protest in front of Carol Skurich's Parks and Rec Department, essentially demanding that bathrooms be reopened instead of being essentially closed to the general community. I mean, they're open at Loudon Nelson, but only to those who are, quote, participating in the events there. And that does not include people using the park, unless they're children using the children's playground, is my understanding of it. The audio you're about to hear involved the sort of the second part of the protest. We arrived with vehicles, a sort of a mock bathroom commode, the Golden Potty Award that I awarded to City Council 20 years ago when they were essentially turning down the need to open up new bathrooms, even then with Christopher Crone and other so-called progressive council members having swept the elections of 1998. And we're planning to do more protests. The Conscience and Action group will be presenting to Martin Bernal, the city manager. He has actually been presented with the proposal that you're going to hear. And this is one of the proposals we'll be hearing. The proposal that, and you're about to hear as well, that Phil Posner presented. I don't agree with it. I don't think Huff agrees with it. But there's some people who do, and it's a partial proposal for reopening the Loudon Nelson and the San Lorenzo bathrooms, involving keeping a monitor there, having a sign-up list, and a set of rules. I don't think monitors, sign-up lists, and a set of rules is necessary for a public bathroom. I think that's part of the whole, tripwire them, regulate them to death. The people to blame for the problems in the downtown area are those who are gathering rather than those who are paranoid about youth and people of color and homeless folks and a broad variety of folks using the public spaces instead of them just being a commercial area for shoppers or a nice, pleasant, upper-middle-class area for those who are well-to-do and can come and go and have their own private facilities at home and have their own place to go and sleep at night. Anyway, I think Phil Posner is attempting to meet with Martin Bernal, and we will be throwing essentially mass meeting with Martin Bernal if he shows up outside his office on next Thursday at 1 o'clock. And that's going to be Thursday the 28th. There's also a protest happening on the same issue in front of the main post office on Saturday, this Saturday coming up, which will be Saturday the 23rd. There's also, that's going to be the same time as the Poor People's Campaign has a rally from 1 to 4 at the downtown post office as an educational event. We will be having a rally commemorating the fact that, concerning the fact that the porta potty that Food Not Bombs rented was taken by parties unknown, at least unknown to me at this time, probably the Parks and Rec or some city agency, which tried to call the porta potty company and demand it be removed, and the porta potty company called back and talked to Keith McHenry, the activist who paid for it. He obligingly moved it across the street from the town clock outside the Parks and Rec's jurisdiction, and then it disappeared the next day. And as of a day or two ago, we still didn't know what had happened to it. But suspicions are high. We're going to be on the lookout, Inspector Clouseau fashion, to try to find out what actually happened to the porta-potty. And people are invited on Saturday. And I guess it starts at noon on June 23rd to come and come to the main post office, bring toilet paper to decorate the fence, wear Depends. We'll have a speak out there. And there'll also be, of course, another event at 1 o'clock, the Santa Cruz Poor People's Campaign. And in addition to the noon rally on June 23rd in front of the post office and the meeting at City Council offices of Martin Bernal, the city manager, who's actually the real power in the city, on June 28th at 1 o'clock, there's going to be an organizational meeting tomorrow on Friday the 21st. Actually, I'm sorry, on Friday the 22nd at the Sub Rosa Cafe at 10:30 in the morning. So come on to that if you want to be a part of organizing this, making signs for it, and so forth. The Poor People's Campaign, additionally, by the way, has a so-called June Nonviolent Networking Night tonight, June 21st, Thursday, 6:30 to 8:30 at the Resource Center for Nonviolence. That's along Ocean Street, right across from the Hotel Paradox, a bit down from Soquel Avenue intersection with Ocean. I think it's 623 or 610, or I don't know the exact address of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and it's not mentioned on this flyer. If you want more information, too, about the seizure, the unconscionable theft of the porta-potty from the Food Not Bombs corner, you can go to the Santa Cruz Indie Bay website, indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, and you can read and see a picture of the porta-potty, which was standing there for a while and then was taken by parties unknown. There's also an interesting letter, which I'm going to read a little bit of, from Nigel Self. Nigel's a guy who's been around Santa Cruz for decades. He was part of protests when I was doing some early protesting and demonstrating to try to demand expansion of services and ending the sleeping ban and criminalization of people outside back in 1990. He called himself Yasawe then, and now he's Nigel Self. I believe it's the same guy. Here's a little of his letter to Parks and Rec boss Carol Skurich. Dear Miss Skurich, regarding your decision to close the Loudoun Nelson Community Center bathrooms to the community, which has forced houseless persons to urinate and defecate in public, you seem to be psychologically confused about the difference between feeling unsafe and being unsafe, as well as the difference between yourself and other persons. In your interview with Ashley Ken of the KION News Channel, published online June 14th, you said, number one for us is wanting to make sure that people that use the facility are there for programs, feel safe and comfortable when they go to the restrooms, and that just wasn't happening. Yet, you did not describe any tangible dangers in the bathrooms that have caused persons to not, quote, feel safe and comfortable. So, what are the real dangers? Have there been a set of recent instances in which persons using the facility for a program went into the bathrooms and were truly physically harmed or threatened with physical harm? For example, when facility program users enter the bathrooms, do injection drug users bolt out of the stalls and stab them with their needles? Do lice-ridden, houseless people tackle them onto the hard tile floors, rub all over them, and transmit their lice? Do greasy-fingered old men with snot running down their noses hide in the ladies' room, naked under trench coats, open their coats, and molest teenage girls? If not, exactly what real dangers are you and your terrified facility users feeling so uncomfortable about? Perhaps your own stereotypes about people who are different and less fortunate than you. While capitalism is inherently dangerous in that it creates global poverty and houselessness, which are dangerous conditions for persons it forces into them, the mere presence of houseless and poor persons in bathrooms is not dangerous. Likewise, while a perpetually failing and racist war on drugs incarcerates over 2 million Americans annually, more so blacks and Latinos than whites, and my interjection not to mention the war on drugs in Santa Cruz, and reaps millions of dollars in profits for corporations that run the privatized prison industrial complex by criminalizing what is really a psychological and medical problem, and we have an expansion of jail facilities here in Santa Cruz, such that most drug use is illegal, as is the case in Santa Cruz, in spite of the statewide proposition, and in spite of the opening up of very limited distribution facilities for recreational marijuana and medical marijuana. The mere presence of drug users and illegal drug use in bathrooms is not dangerous. In Jessica York's May 30 of Santa Cruz Sentinel article, you said, we're finding people that are doing really, really unsafe and illegal activity in the restrooms. Here, similar to confusion about the difference between feeling unsafe and being unsafe, you seem to be confused about the difference between yourself and others. Doing really, really unsafe and illegal drug activity, as you delicately sidestepped it, she didn't say drug activity, she said illegal activity, is unsafe for the persons doing it who might overdose and die, not for you or other persons peeing next to them. Thus, unless you can demonstrate a set of recent incidents in which Loudoun Nelson Center Community Program users were put in real danger or real threat of danger in the bathrooms, such as by providing police incident reports or reliable witness accounts, then the bathrooms are not dangerous, and your position that you close them as a matter of public safety is totally specious and a flimsy screen for fear-driven bigotry. You are an adult, your emotions are your own, and barring actual physical trauma or threat of physical trauma done to you that automatically elicits a biologically based and uncontrollable fear reaction, nobody can make you feel anything. But instead of taking adult responsibility for your own feelings of discomfort with houseless persons and drug users, you are shifting the responsibility for your feelings onto them. Drug users and houseless persons are not responsible for your feelings about them. You are. Further, if you are so confused that the mere presence of persons who are houseless or using drugs in bathrooms automatically elicits a biologically based and uncontrollable fear reaction in you, this confusion is yours, and you should likewise take responsibility for it by sorting it out rather than projecting it onto them. You remind me of college students who want safe places on campus, quote-unquote, in which they can feel safe from others' words. While everyone should be free from verbal harassment, some students take, quote, safe places for feelings from words that are not dangerous to such an extreme that they violate others' right to free speech. Like them, you seem to be a tyrant of feelings who uses her own emotions as an excuse for violating others' human rights, in this case, the right to use the bathroom. Because of your tyranny of feelings, people must now piss in bottles and shit on the sidewalks. Notably, as reported in the Sentinel, when a homeless woman who could not hold in her pee, urinated on the community center lawn, one of your rangers called the police, spurring six officers to arrive, who took her to jail. Shame on you and your inhumane authoritarian tactics. As Parks and Recreation Director, you set the policy and tone for your staff, so you are partly to blame for your ranger's thuggery. As Parks and Recreation Director from the outset, had you taken a democratic leadership approach and involved community members in dialogue to resolve their conflicts and seek consensual solutions regarding their bathroom concerns, we might have some solutions now. Instead, your personal tyranny of feelings, subsequent knee-jerk authoritarian behavior, and overall poor leadership and poor people skills as a director have needlessly heightened tensions, polarized our community, and derailed opportunities for community-based solutions. Given your poor leadership, it is you and your ranger thugs who are now a tangible danger to our community. Two can play your game. I want my city parks and community centers to be safe spaces, and as you put it, I do not feel, quote, safe and comfortable with tyrants of emotion like you in charge of them. Thus, send me the police reports or reliable witness accounts of the recent set of instances in which Loudoun Nelson Community Center program users were actually harmed or threatened with harm in the bathrooms, which prove that the bathrooms are so dangerous that your decision to close them is justified. Otherwise, take adult responsibility for your own feelings of discomfort, apologize for your mistake, immediately reopen the bathrooms to the public, and begin an in-depth process of democratic community dialogue in which all persons concerned can work toward common ground regarding bathroom use. You're incapable of doing these things. Perhaps you should resign as interim Parks and Recreation Director, as authoritarian governments always take root with fear-driven policies and thuggery that override human rights. And given what seems to be your penchant for engaging in such tactics from the outset, rather than democratic community building, it may be best that you not be in public administration for now. Sincerely, Nigel Self. And that was a letter sent to Carol Skurich and a bunch of other people written June 17th, 2018. Of course, the real responsibility lies above her with Martin Bernal, since he can fire her or direct her to act otherwise, I believe. He's the most powerful figure in the city, as I mentioned before, and that's why after he is informed that he can resolve, if he can resolve issues before June 28th, it may not be necessary to have a community meeting with him outside his office or in his office or in the antechambers of his office at City Hall at 1 o'clock on June 28th, next Thursday. I doubt it. I think Bernal feels he's in a position of power, but this has become a very, somewhat high-profile issue. It's been mentioned at least in some of the media, though I don't see it capturing the headlines, like the seizure of children that prompted Trump's reversal of policy. Now both the kids and the parents get to be jailed together, whoopee-doo, in terms of the let's get all those immigrants out. Nativist policies being followed by the Trump regime, the expansion and continuation of the Obama nativist policies, we might add, all those Democrats who are leaping on the policy to do their anti-Trump number without really fundamentally challenging the policies that they essentially have been supporting for decades. I applaud Nigel's attempt to get public records. I made that request back in late May, I believe it was. It may have been early June. And so far they have delayed twice, saying that they needed more time to gather the records. And in the past what I've done is I've requested they release whatever records they have, if any, and then give me the rest of the records when they can do that. And they've declined to do that. But I'm going to do that again today when I'm finished making this show. I create the show several hours before broadcast. And I'm going to see if they can come up with any instances of real concerns about public health and safety. One thing that Nigel Self doesn't mention that is also a big issue, supposedly, and one that shuts down some critics who are critics of this closure of bathrooms, essentially an anti-homeless measure along with the anti-homeless fence and the anti-homeless rules about having your property on the passageways or the trails or the walls and so forth, or sitting there. When we did the protests, as you may have heard if you listened to our last show, people making signs sitting on the low-lying wall next to City Hall, traditionally where people have sat for decades, were told it was now illegal to do that. Of course, it isn't illegal. It's a violation of the rules of the City Hall, which they posted simply to get rid of protesters who were sitting there. A complete violation of their right to protest, to petition, to peacefully petition the government for redress of grievances, their First Amendment rights, both under the California and state constitutions. But then again, when they have power, why should they care unless people are willing to stand up and challenge them on it, which is, of course, what some of us are doing, which I hope listeners will consider doing. Come to the meeting tomorrow to help organize this on June 22nd at the Sub Rosa at 10:30 in the morning, the Sub Rosa Cafe. Come to the noon protest Saturday, June 23rd, at the main post office to demand the whereabouts of the missing porta potty. So not only are they closing their own facilities, they're refusing to allow other people to open up facilities so that the community will have a bathroom or at least a porta potty to go to that's clean and a wash station. These were opened up in San Lorenzo Park with the hepatitis A epidemic down in San Diego that hit last fall or last summer. But of course, they were removed when the San Lorenzo campground was ordered away. And then, of course, the main protest will be happening on Thursday, June 28th, at 1 o'clock at City Hall, 809 Center Street, at the City Council offices, so that Martine Bernal can answer some questions directly, since he's the man who has the power and apparently is making the decision to allow those who are poor to crap in their pants and piss on the flowers, or require them to do so, in fact. And I'll be happy to see some real figures regarding the so-called vandalism and the so-called crime wave that has hit the bathrooms in Loudoun Nelson. I did get a brief interview about this with Skidmark Bob Duran, a one-time activist around these issues on the other side, who now works for the city. How times have changed. And he didn't have any actual figures. He did acknowledge there was vandalism at the area where he worked in the Loudoun Nelson Center. and there was needle problems. They used to have a safe needle disposal facility there, a sharps container, but they removed it, and now, of course, they're complaining about needles, and that's suddenly their excuse for closing the bathrooms. Because this is connected with the fencing around the park and the new rules and increased patrolling of the park area for homeless people, it seems clear what they're really trying to do is drive away homeless people from the neighborhood, and that this is something we have to fight, because this is an example of essentially using the police state to enforce gentrification of an area. And for those of you who think you're safe because you're indoors, as they raise the rents, you're not. And as your wages, if you can find a job, don't keep pace with the rents, you may find yourself in the same situation. Or at least you may know people who are in the situation of being outside and being treated like trash, dirt, or unworthy individuals who aren't entitled to the protection of the Constitution. So before I turn to some more of the demonstration, and we'll talk about that in a moment, or you'll actually hear that in a moment, let's have a little musical relief. That would be nice.
I am a rock star. I ride in limousines. I bet you don't. I've been around the world, get paid to live my dream. I bet you don't. Maybe you're working in some stinking factory, working hard for a chicken feed wage, working overtime, even Saturdays, but you still ain't got a damn thing, do ya? You ain't got a damn thing, do ya? Ha ha ha! I am a baseball star. I make $1 million. Kids look up to me. I snorted lots of coke for my 300 stroke till they convicted me. I hear there's people in penitentiaries serving sentences locked behind bars. I don't really care. The judge set me free. I've got to donate to a charity cause. Hey, that's tax deductible. Good for me. I am an executive of an important firm, a Wall Street tycoon. I moved my factory over to Taiwan, a smart business move. Here in America, we're closing factories. We know that families are losing their homes. Those grateful Taiwanese don't even want free cheese. It's not my problem. My profits are up. It's not my problem. My profits up. Yeah. I am the daughter of a famous movie star. Be what I want to be. A famous singer, a Broadway dancer, or a big star on TV. Talented people are out working really hard and getting nowhere after paying their dues. They're working in the bars, taking chips in jars. I don't care. I'll get the part, Daddy said. I'll get my part, Daddy said. Yeah. We are the people who you call the chosen few. Cause we get to do whatever we want. You wanna be like me? Go play the lottery. Your chances are only 1 billion to 1. It's the American way.
And that was Ann Feeney, Spoiled Brats of the Ruling Class, 5 years ago. You can find her on YouTube. I ran into a whole bunch of her old audio tapes, which I got to find a way to hook up to this machine, and I will be able to play them with some, less reduction of quality. Again, that's Spoiled Brats of the Ruling Class. Now you'll be able to hear some more from the protest from last Thursday, and maybe it'll inspire you to check out the protest coming up next Thursday. I hope so. And to set the scene again, there's about 20 of us in a group outside Parks and Rec headquarters, which is right across from City Hall next to the Civic Auditorium, more or less, or just down from the Civic. And speaking is Phil Posner, who's raising issues, which, as I mentioned before, I don't entirely agree with. Huff took a somewhat more radical position. Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom took a more radical position than Conscience in Action, which is a coalition of groups. But Carol Skurich couldn't give us a decent response to Phil Posner's or anyone else's comments, at least in terms of our basic objective, which is to open the bathrooms now.
Gentlemen. I think I have this gentleman and then this.
So I was at City Council meeting Tuesday, and I gave a talk. And I, at the end of it, having spoken to Chief Police Chief Mills, he basically liked a couple of my suggestions. One was that at Loudoun, because you do have a legitimate problem sometimes with bad stuff that goes on, that at the office, people sign in to use the bathroom. They have to sign in, and so then at least you have some, the name of people who are using the bathroom. They also have to sign a thing saying, I understand that in using this bathroom, I have to treat it properly, otherwise I can be in, you know, get in trouble with the law, blah, some kind of statement like that. So that was one of my suggestions. The other one is that in all the places where people have to go to park, that are controlled by Park and Rec throughout the city, that there be a sign that says, this facility is open for public use. Understand that if you break the law, you will suffer, blah, 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 blah. So at least making people realize. The third one is, as Louise said, and I know it's up to the council, it's not up to Park and Rec, but you can have a voice in that, and that is, and I talked to Councilwoman,
Orion.
She's concerned about it. And she said that she thought the city is moving towards the realization that they may have to hire people to be there in these places. And one of the issues that's come up is the issue of hiring unemployed people, including possibly homeless people, who would like to have the job, or would be willing to have the job of once a day cleaning the bathrooms, so you guys don't have to have employees like at Loudoun who have to pick up shit just on the floor.
Well, just so you know, and just to respond, it's not... Oh, thank you.
And I want to thank you for coming out and talking
And thank you for your suggestions. And I think they're ones to really be considered strongly.
Yeah, let me interrupt briefly to note... I don't, really. I mean, first of all, they should pay people a decent wage to do the kind of cleaning up work around public bathrooms that needs to be done, whatever you're dealing with. If you have a large homeless population, you can have a worse problem because people will be doing things like washing in sinks. They will be doing the so-called inappropriate behaviors, violating the rules that Phil suggests that could be posted that we could all follow like good little middle-class people, although we lack the great privilege or the small detail of having a house and the facilities necessary in a house to follow those rules. Secondly, well, I don't want to really repeat myself suggesting that there be monitors to make sure everyone pees properly and doesn't vandalize the facilities or surveils the area more closely. You're going to have a certain amount of vandalism. You have that in bar bathrooms from people late at night. I would wonder what the comparison is between the figures of middle-class users who drink and then use the facilities and that are in, you know, the bar bathrooms or nearby bathrooms. Compare that with the amount of damage done to facilities that they aren't even open 24 hours a day, that are at like places like the metro or the parking garages. And I don't have those figures right now. I'm having enough trouble trying to get the Loudoun-Nelson specifics, which they should have given me weeks ago, but they haven't given me. And again, I think we are going to be demanding those figures. I will, anyway, next Thursday. with hopefully a lot of other people doing the same. It is true, by the way, this proposal for a monitor has been supported by some houseless activists who have suggested that it's a way of bringing together the right and the left, so to speak, that it's something that conservative people would feel more comfortable because they're uncomfortable taking a pee next to a homeless person, and that homeless people would feel better because they'd be able to use the bathrooms, if I understand the argument. Doesn't persuade me, but I thought I'd try to mention it. I'm probably getting it wrong. Anyway, let's hear some more.
It's really not about cleaning the restrooms, and I really appreciate that. That's such nice, and I think we do have people that would do that, that do clean, and that we would have people that would volunteer. For us, it's really a bigger issue. It's not, I mean, that is an issue, the cleaning and what's you know, the challenge of that. Really, it's about illegal behavior that's going on there, and that do clean, and that we would have people that would volunteer. For us, it's really a bigger issue. It's not, I mean, that is an issue, the cleaning and what's you know, the challenge of that. Really, it's about illegal behavior that's going on there. And in order to...
When you say illegal behavior, you mean drugs?
Drugs and sex in general. And also vandalism and that type of thing. So.
And this, of course, was the challenge raised by Nigel Self in his letter, and that I tried to get some more specific statistics on by asking for the public records of all police calls, all costs for to repair the Loudoun Nelson bathrooms in the last year, things of that sort, all arrests, all complaints, and not a word, nothing from them yet. So it really depends to some extent on the will to keep these places open. I mean, if you're willing to spend tens of thousands of dollars on consultants to move the library into the basement or underneath a five-story parking garage, you certainly can afford to spend some money taking care of the most essential human needs that are happening every day and that are actually setting the community against each other. One of the reasons why there's antipathy toward homeless people is they got no place to take a shit or take a piss. And the same people that you would think would support this have this fascistic notion that if only you make things hard enough, then you will not need to provide these essential decency facilities. So just drive them away. That's their Rochelle Naroyan approach.
So really for us, and in order to, and we've tried this, in having an attendant, you have to have somebody that's really been trained. And Loudoun Nelson staff are trained, and they deal with people that are challenging all the time because people get really very angry and are very difficult to deal with. So if we do get into a situation where we can have regular people there monitoring the restrooms, they really need to be trained and they really need to know how to deal with people.
You would think that people would be particularly angry if they can't use the bathrooms. But again, in a way, these public officials seem to make it up as they go or reach out to seize whatever kinds of pretexts and excuses will fit the bill, placate the crowd before they move indoors. And that, of course, was the whole problem with this whole discussion, that people were listening to Carol Skurich rather than essentially asking, are you going to open the bathrooms or not? You know, you have some specific particular figures that demonstrate a real problem. And if so, show them to us. If you haven't got any new information, we don't want to hear the same old stuff. And let's go over to the city manager's office and talk to him. Let's go check out the bathrooms across the street that should be open, but they're locked during the day, the ones right next to city council offices. Let's go over to the Parks and Rec Department, Human Resources Agency there, and apply for somebody else to take your job because they are looking for someone to take the position of head of Parks and Rec. And, of course, that would be unlikely to choose any of us. But I think the point could be made to apply. Also, Skurich would not take complaints. At least her employees would not take complaints, but insisted we go across the street to make complaints. Even though it was her office we were complaining about.
Properly, you know, so that it de-escalates situations and doesn't make it worse. So next we have this lady.
Thank you. And then this gentleman.
Excuse me. Number one, the bathroom across the street from New Leaf for months, no latch. I own a $1 million house on the west side, okay? I need to use the facilities. This checking in? No. We as people have rights, access to any bathroom. Locking them? No. The dilemma is how we're treating the homeless. Now they can't even sleep in the day without being harassed. So, okay, you've got discontent. Well, it's up to you people to mediate and find a neutral ground and not point the finger at the homeless.
And, of course, what is being pointed out here is that this closing of the bathrooms actually impacts disabled and elderly people and probably tourists as well. It's a foolish kind of pseudo-economy that shuts down the bathrooms or that responds to apprehension about drug use and so forth. I mean, these are real problems. They need to be addressed probably with real solutions, like establishing places people can go to use drugs and facilities they can use to get off drugs if that's their intention. None of that is significantly available now. Instead, people are being scapegoated all over the place. Instead, it's being used as a pretext to increase the police state and shut things down and indeed, as you hear, demand more policing as though it was necessary to do that because of the very fact that someone is using an illegal substance. You know, I don't think so.
Period. They are human beings with equal rights, and a lot of them have mental health issues. So nobody's dealing with that. As a fact, there's only one facility that will maintain the severe mental illness, and that's Front Street. And where do the rest go, ma'am, who can't take care of themselves? In the street. And how many people can the homeless shelter provide services for? And if you have animals, forget it. You know, and if you care about your possessions, forget it, because it's not safe. And it's run by, and it's full of drugs. So, excuse me, we've got to deal with the issues, and the toilets are just one of them. Thank you.
Just gentlemen, and you know what, really, I'm going to take just a couple more questions and then I'm going to have to go back into work.
And of course, the problem here again is you don't allow the public official to try to organize, moderate, control the protest. The protest is about her behavior, so you don't give her the power over her behavior yet. And we'll see if we can correct that when we challenge Martine Bernal on Thursday.
So, a couple more, please.
Yeah, so the I've noticed that we spend a lot of money on First Alarm, and they're supposedly trained to deal with these things. And what I see them doing personally is going to people, waking them up, telling them they have to leave, calling the police, having the police come, take all their belongings and everything. And those people, for all that money, could actually be stationed at several bathrooms. So that's one thing. And I don't know if that's, you know, we're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on them. Why couldn't they actually be, you know, they're at Loudoun Nelson. Why aren't they, like, watching the bathrooms?
What, just to answer your question, because I think that is a good question. Uh-huh. We do have a ranger that's stationed there, and unfortunately, they're patrolling all over. They're there to work with people in Laurel Park and the community center. And what we've noticed is between the staff and the ranger, people are watching and are, you know, abusing the situation and know when they can go in and do things. I mean, that's the only.
Again, no specifics.
thing that I can imagine, because we do have people there, and I think our staff at Loudoun tries to be really vigilant and watch, but unfortunately people know. They know there's cameras there. They're hiding their faces. It's going on when they're watching people.
What's going on? We don't really know what she's talking about. It becomes the mysterious menace, which is a useful pretext for a policy that really is just close things down to the poor and they'll go away.
But I think what you're saying is, I think, is someone needs to be stationed there all the time. And so I think that's something. We don't have funding for that, but I hear what you're saying is...
And that's not really what he's saying. He's saying if you're going to be funding people to march around like stormtroopers getting rid of the poor anyway, have them do something useful instead, like stand over by the bathroom, if that's your real concern. And she, of course, is twisting the argument into one, good idea, let's have more policing, and two, oh, well, we need more funding for that.
Is that something that you really are wanting the city to do?
Yeah, and so we raised enough money to in monthly donations to get a portable toilet, which we have placed over by the post office, because we there'll be like all these stories, oh, you got to stop feeding the homeless because they go to the bathroom and so on, and there's really no bathrooms around there other than the bookstore when it's open, but it's not always open. So we thought, okay, we'll just have a solution. We'll just pay for our own portable toilet. So we have that stationed there at the clock tower now, and we'll just continue to pay for that. And that way, people will be able to use it and has hand washed and so on. So we're going to do that. But I've also noticed, I've traveled all over the world, and you do see an attendant at almost all public bathrooms in every part of the world.
And before we leave this, Scourge made no objection to this idea of this porta potty appearing at the town clock, which she did that day, Thursday, a week ago. But Parks and Rec Department the next day called the porta potty company and demanded it be removed, saying it had no permit. When Keith McHenry tried to get a permit, he was told they had no process for providing permits. This is the identical kind of Alice in Wonderland excuse he got when he tried to get permits to feed people in the parks in San Francisco when they were arresting literally over 1,000 people over the course of 6 years because of the Food Not Bombs program of feeding folks openly in the parks up in Golden Gate Park and in front of the mayor's office at the Civic Center back from 1988 through 1995. And there is, I think, still feeding programs going on up there. But the point is that Scourge made no objection to the porta potty that McHenry got. And indeed, I visited it myself, and as I mentioned in the last broadcast, it was clean. It had a wash station. It was unlocked, unlike the other porta potties during the day, which are locked, with the exception of the one that isn't over at Laurel and Front Street. That's a pretty thin reed for the health and comfort of the community to depend upon both day and night, at least in terms of at night, it's the only one that's open. It's the only one that's open both day and night. There are a couple that are unlocked at night on Cedar Street but are not disabled, accessible. Anyway, let's hear some more.
Except for the United States. So, I can't recall ever going to a bathroom outside the U.S. where there wasn't an attendant.
I've been all over Europe, and I don't remember seeing attendants in Europe. So I've been to Holland. But you know what? That's not the issue here.
Yeah.
The issue is we want to provide restrooms for the public. So, and I think that's a fair comment.
Yeah.
Okay, so I...
But only some of the public, apparently.
I think. Did you want to speak again?
Yeah, I know that.
Wait a minute.
But I didn't see your hand, so it's I'll get to you.
Okay.
I'm not ignoring you.
Well,
I thought you were
about to make an escape.
No, I said I'd take a couple more questions, and I will not escape before hearing from you.
Robert hasn't spoken in the past.
I know that people, the homeless, are treated differently at Loudoun Nelson than the middle class, and they're often treated really unfairly. And when you, and my comment is, when you take powerless people and abuse them, they're going to respond in an infantile way.
This is Louise.
Like
Drummond.
Smearing poop all over, like a baby would. And so I think that Parks and Recreation has part of the responsibility for it, for what's happening in there. It doesn't happen in a vacuum.
Well, you know what? I don't want to be defensive. But I really like to think that our employees are compassionate, caring, especially in Parks and Recreation. We deal with people day in and day out. It's our job. And it's something that we're involved in Parks and Recreation because we love that.
And, of course, the reality here is not that Parks and Rec individuals as human beings are bad people. It is rather the orders they are under, the directives they are given, and the power they are given changes them. They become sort of cogs in a machine. I say the same about the police departments. I think this is generally what happens. The people become simply functioning parts of a broader machine. And so they're directed to harass homeless people. Then they harass homeless people, and they feel proud that they're able to fulfill their job. And they say, I have to do my job. And that's how evil happens throughout the world mostly. It doesn't happen because people have evil in their hearts. It happens because they think they are doing what they have to do, or they think they're doing good.
I don't think that's all, you know, that we're not perfect and we're not, above making mistakes. But I will say that it is not a homeless issue. I do not believe that. I think it's an issue of people going in and using the restrooms the way they should be used. And this has gone on for years where we've had the restrooms open.
But again, if this were really the case, then these stats would have been brought out for the public to look at. There would be a public discussion of these issues. Instead, this whole thing has happened behind closed doors. And it hasn't just been the restrooms that have been affected, as I continue to repeat. Iron wrought fence all around the park. New rules about if you have your backpack with you and you set it down as you sit, that's a crime. Or that's a basis for harassing you by the Parks and Rec Ranger or by a first alarm security guard. People's property being stolen after they wake up and in the days when they could use the bathroom, went to the bathroom, they came back, and it gets stolen not by a fellow homeless people, which does happen, or by other individuals who aren't police force folks, but by Parks and Rec Rangers who then take it and it disappears into a great gaping void. These are all parts of a general policy, of a general hostility toward the poor that is happening. And that's why for her to make this kind of a statement really disqualifies her from being head of Parks and Rec. And I have to agree with Nigel Self there if that is his position.
And so we got to a point, again, is all I can say is we got to a point where it was not safe for the youth of our community. We have programs that say we don't come to Loud Nelson. It is not safe. We don't feel good about our children using the restrooms there.
And again, pulling out the children, she probably has some documentation of some people pulling out of Parks and Rec programs. And maybe that's one of the issues, that they don't want to lose the money that they would get from groups, because you do pay, for example, to rent rooms for events and to rent the park for certain kinds of public events. If some are keep complaining, ooh, those, we don't want those homeless people around. But if you can turn it into an issue of illegal conduct and misuse of the bathrooms in a way that hurts the health and safety of people, even though you can't really cite or don't really cite, they haven't, specific instances, they've had an opportunity. These stories have been in the paper. Instead, we get these vague claims. Then you have to look at what's really going on. And what's really going on is something quite different than what they say is going on.
I've got at least three programs off the top of my head that said, don't schedule us at Loudon. And that's really heartbreaking to me. So
more bathrooms.
So I'm just trying to figure out how I can satisfy everyone, which is a challenging situation. So, Robert, you had a question, and then I'm going to take one more, and then I really need to get to work.
We've got
to
go.
You've been very nice.
All right. So I've a couple of questions. One is the original question was, do you have forms here, if necessary, that people could file complaints on?
We don't. No,
you
we
don't. You know, okay, that's number one.
You know, but if you'd like to have a piece of paper and write down your concerns and complaints, and I'm not being facetious at all, of course we always we're getting complaints from people.
We may do that. I may do that. The second question is, you talk a lot about security, and then suddenly it's the children and needles and following the law. These are all different things. Security to me means there being a real threat to a person. Now, people will tell you that improper disposal of needles is a threat, and that's true. But Loudon Nelson abandoned the practice of having Sharps containers years ago, over my objections, I might add. So do you actually have reports, and are you prepared to make those public, of every incident where there actually was a legitimate, or even what you regard as, and we may not regard, as a legitimate safety threat at this bathroom there, and the bathrooms in San Lorenzo Park, which have also been closed, as you know.
Well, Robert, you've made a public records request on that. We will provide that.
But I'm asking you personally. Are you prepared to be responsible for getting that information to us?
Well, of course, a public records request we will respond to.
Their response has been to delay it twice, and we've gotten no information so far.
We, by law, are required to do that, and of course we'll do that.
I'll be waiting.
I think we should owe our thanks for coming
thanks
out.
Thanks for coming out.
Thank you very much.
Well,
I appreciate
the director was not nearly nice.
Well, and thank you for being respectful. And I know this is a really it's a challenging issue, and I appreciate you guys. Thank you. You know what? For basically basically the same reason. So,
as far as the training goes, is it part of the training if the security guard asks the
question.
Name? Their name is that like and it's just disregarded and said, I don't have to tell you? Is that part of their training?
I can't answer your question.
What?
I don't know the answer to that. I really don't. I don't know what the law is.
The reason he was asking the question if Parks and Rec Ranger or somebody employed by your agency, First Alarm Security perhaps, is asked their name, isn't it their obligation to give their name? And he says, I don't know the law. It's not the law. It has to do with the policy and the agreement that she or their department has with the police agency. So she's ducking. And what really bothered me is we're sitting around, you know, playing tea party with this woman, being very, very nice to her, when the same issue, which is really the reason we're there, we're not there to be nice to this city official. We're there to challenge this city official and to hold her accountable. In fact, to shame her for what she is doing. And that isn't happening. People aren't shouting, shame, shame. People aren't shouting bullshit when she's giving these evasive answers or these vague comments about the children and safety and needles and not answering where are the Sharps containers. And so we need to step up our game.
I really don't.
But it doesn't exude a very professional attitude.
Well, I'm really sorry that you feel that way.
Thanks for coming out.
Thank you.
Thank you. Quarter party, maybe.
Hello.
In the town. Okay. Thank you.
And thank you.
Everyone, let's go poop at this town clock.
I'm going to go get her card.
I feel like you handled that really, really well.
And that was Carol Skurich of the Parks and Rec.
He didn't hear you.
Absolutely nothing. Stand still. She talked around all the issues and didn't even resolve anything and made it look like the homeless were the reasons why instead of being accountable for their actions. So it takes two in a relationship. And once a person gets frustrated, you get reaction. So the people are reacting. And as far as I can see, this town's about ready to explode between people about ready to be homeless, the bus issue, and food, and the rent here. And as far as I'm concerned, rent control is a band-aid. Because why? None of those people building those are fined. they pay the fine because it's so low. So basically, people, let's raise the fine for the developers, and then the rent will come down. Until then, nothing will happen.
Thank you. And we've been listening to
Karen Coleman.
Anybody else have any thoughts about what was said here?
I have a thought that this is kind of discreet, but, you know, people are forever telling me to send an email at the bus station when our buses are now 10 minutes late because Alex Clifford is loading up the drivers with so much work. They literally can't get from one bus to the next bus on time. They're stuck in traffic. And this is, as Karen just said, this is ubiquitous without the city. If I were to start sending emails for all the difficulties that I'm encountering as a person who's not wealthy and relying on public services, I literally would be spending all my time, first of all, taking notes on what happened and when, and then getting to the library to use a computer to send the emails. And then what happens to the emails? I feel that this protest is so much more effective to bring us all together and to have a public person actually on film speaking to this than our own individual selves sending these emails all isolated in a corner, which they can just ignore. I don't know, but that's my offering.
We've been listening to.
This is Elise Casby.
Anybody else have other thoughts about what they got or didn't get out of this discussion?
Thanks for coming, everybody.
The question now, Conscience in Action has a meeting on Wednesday. Nick, is that correct? Are you?
That's right.
11 o'clock at the Sub Rosa. If you want to plan the next action around this.
We did have that meeting, and it was very well attended, much more so than previous Conscience in Action meetings. And we plan this next protest coming up next Thursday at 1 o'clock at Martine Bernal's office at City Hall. So all has not been lost.
So that's going to be at the Sub Rosa Cafe, 11 a.m. next Wednesday.
Do you want to keep the signs?
Sure, I can keep all the signs if you want. I'll put them in my car.
Thank you, Robert.
Thank you,
Robert.
Thank you. It was Nick, the organizer.
Enough crap, more crappers.
And that was the protest that was the first, apparently, of a series. You're tuned to Free Radio 101.3 FM, freakradio.org. I'm Robert, and the name of the show is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides.
It's been raining for a couple of days now. My gas pond is overflowing. The orange fish are at the back door. Toxic flood water is flowing. And we shake our heads and get in the car. Forget those things we said. Love under the stars. 2, 3. I go back and forth daily. Not us and them, and who's really to blame?
Can I get more drums in the monitor?
But I think it's pretty clear here who has got the most to gain. From the divided up. Society, terrifying honesty, can't discern our enemies, so give them our complicity. They make beer and we buy it, they make cars and we drive them, they build walls and we just give in, they build boxes that we live in, they make gods for us to pray to. Jobs to give our days to, binaries of gender, but they won't have my surrender. No.
I don't know, Anne, this is where the epic cello solo usually goes. As we look at the world around us, everything we see is crazy. So we drink, and we smoke, Can we watch the TV? They say don't take your life so seriously. I say this is the only way that I know how to be. Cause we need passion, not fashion. We need food, not lawn. We need action, not fashion. We need everyone here to be singing along. We need stories, not glory. We need friends, not fans. We need guitars, not rock stars. We need more than just loud, drunk, straight, white, male, punk bands. So let's destroy out of love and build out of anger. Get our heads out of our asses. See our lives are in danger. It's the world as we know it. It's not gonna last forever. And these could be the last days. This is your part. So let's spend them together. Everyone, let's spend them together. Let's spend them together. Let's spend them together. Let's spend them. Never surrender. Let's never surrender. Let's never surrender. Let me hear ya. Let's never surrender.
That manifests itself in a lot of different ways. This song is about one of the more kind of catastrophic and intense of that I recently came into contact with. It's an experimental song. It kind of sounds like guitar tuning, but it's really about suicide. Alright, this is called What Friends Are For. You called me up, the ringing woke me from my slumber. You sounded pretty fucked up, so glad you memorized my number. You said you'd done it again, you thought this time it might be the end. I said, no, don't you dare, hang on friends, I'll be right there. Then I got in the car and put the gas to the floor. 15 minutes I was at your door, there was blood in the seat, it hit 110. I took a drag off of your cigarette and put exactly 4 gallons of the very same shit that fucked the world up so bad. You would do this, I tried to explain how the planet is sick. We do to ourselves what we've done to it. But by the time we got there, you couldn't hear me anymore. You were passed out, forehead on the dashboard. My tears splashed down to the hospital floor. They held me back, wheeled you through the doors. This is what friends are for. When the weight of it all cuts to the bone, I can't take it anymore. No one could get through this alone. And said, you gotta get me out of this place. I said, I don't think I should. The doctor's on his way back. You don't look so good. I guess you sensed my fear. You said, if I'm gonna die, I'm not doing it here. So I pulled up the tubes and helped you into the chair. Someone behind us yelled, stop right there. And you were laughing again. You threw down the hall. Her voice is
out to the morning light. He screamed, everything is gonna be alright. Sometimes this world's too much to take. Your eyes snap shut and your heart it breaks. But you were out of the chair, we were in the car, peeling out, tires squealing for that bright red star. The sun rose over our tired town. We turned the radio up, rolled the windows down. This is what friends are for. Could get through this alone. And it's times like these when it all makes too much sense. The connections burn so clearly, and that feeling in your chest. When movement feels like murder, and it hurts to take a breath. When the world needs so much more, you've got nothing left. That is what friends are for. You've lost faith in everything. I can't take it anymore. I know you do.
And that was Two by Evan Greer. The first included Ann Feeney, Never Surrender. The second, What Friends Are For. And here's an article from the San Francisco Chronicle, Jogger Who Dismantled Camp Faces Charges, by Aaron Stone. This is from June 14th. An Oakland man who became known as Jogger Joe when he paused during a run to throw away a homeless man's makeshift camp beside Lake Merritt in Oakland, was charged Wednesday with robbery in a case that displays the growing power of videos people share on social media in an effort to gain instant justice. The episode, seen by many as a testament to community action, but by one of the jogger's friends as a glimpse into online extremes, began Friday when 30-year-old Henry William Sinte was confronted by bystanders at the lake. They filmed him as he discarded the homeless man's clothing and other possessions. Sinte responded that he was simply cleaning up heaps of trash. A day later, when Sinte returned, another person began shooting live video of him and peppering him with questions. At one point, Sinte grabbed the phone, tussled with the owner, and ran off, perhaps not realizing that his movements were still being streamed on Facebook Live. Oakland police said they said Sinte was arrested Monday and later confessed to the strong-arm robbery. I think they're talking about the robbery of the phone of the guy who was videoing, not the homeless possessions. He was expected to appear in court in the afternoon after Alameda County prosecutors filed a felony charge of second-degree robbery, and at the time of this story was being held on a $100,000 bail at Santa Rita Jail in Dublin. Sinte's discarding of the homeless man's belongings caused an uproar on social media, in part because it came after another video-recorded incident at Lake Merritt that went viral, in which a white woman called police on two black men, Kenzio Smith and Onsayo Abram, reporting that they were unlawfully grilling with charcoal. Hordes of people online worked to expose the woman's identity. Around the country, people have increasingly turned cell phone cameras on not only government officials and police officers, but ordinary people seen as engaging in abuse or racism. In the Sinte case, the filming actually became part of the episode, propelling and changing it. Oakland City Councilwoman Lynette Gibson McElhaney was among those who condemned the dismantling of the homeless man's makeshift camp. "We're all very concerned about an individual who presumably wanted to take it upon himself to disturb or dismantle a person camping in our public space, and that's just totally unacceptable." I wonder if she has the same attitude toward the police, McElhaney said. Lake Merritt is an extremely robust space, from joggers to artists to people reading, but at the core of all is that diversity of use that has to be for mutual respect. Nice sentiments. Manny Martinez, a 53-year-old high school English teacher who was at the lake Wednesday, said the incident and the reaction to it speaks to a much deeper ailment of this country and our divisions, whether it's social, class, or race. Sinte was filmed Friday evening throwing away armfuls of clothing and other possessions of a homeless man named Drew, who lived beside the lake and has since drawn supporters who have sought to raise money for him. On Wednesday, Drew was back beside the lake, but he declined to speak to a reporter, saying he was a little, quote, talked out. In the initial video, bystanders plead with Sinte to stop what he is doing. "It's not yours," one woman says. Sinte responds, "I'm picking up trash. What do you want me to do? If you want to help, help." The charge against Sinte was filed in connection with a separate incident Saturday evening, court records show. Matt Nelson, a community our organizer, observed Sinte pulling some of the homeless man's belongings from the lake and began streaming on Facebook Live with his phone. In this video, laced with profanity, Sinte says he had cleaned up the homeless man's things, but that some had fallen in the lake, prompting him to try to get it out. Sinte's grab of the phone is preserved on video, as is his sprint away from the victim. Nelson said later on Facebook that he sustained a mild concussion and some cuts and bruises. That's the guy's phone, I think it was. But would recover. In a statement Wednesday, Nelson, executive director of the social organization Presente.org, said he was relieved to hear of Sinte's arrest. His arrest was the result of wide-scale community participation, driven by an incredible commitment to the well-being of all Oakland residents, Nelson said. While what happened to him was horrible, it does not begin to compare with the daily mistreatment of our neighbors who are unhoused, homeless, or unsheltered. A woman who described herself as a friend of Sinte said that what he did was wrong, but that she was alarmed by people writing online that he deserved to die and should kill himself. "Let's not lose our humanity in this because we're literally becoming what we're fighting against," said the woman, who asked only to be identified by her initials K.A. out of fear of being associated with the case. "People make mistakes, and if everyone was shunned and over every bad mistake they'd made, none of us would have anybody. I don't believe that an action can define a human." Sinte is part of a community of musicians and festival-goers, friends said. K.A. said he had fallen on hard times himself in the past, including living on friends' couches. Another friend, who also spoke on condition of anonymity, said he had called Sinte before the Saturday incident and was supposed to meet him to help him take Drew's belongings out of the lake. "He can be a jerk," the man said, "but he's not a monster. I guess he was just having a moment. That's the only thing I can think of." And that's the story. Lake Merritt jogger charged with robbery by Aaron Stone. And so my immediate thought was, wow, at least someone's called to account for helping, you know, for attacking a homeless person, destroying their possessions. But then I read on the same day, or at least the newspaper is dated the same, another account of this in the San Jose Mercury News. And this account reads a little differently, because I guess it was done a little later. And it reads, "Judge calls jogger Joe a threat. Man accused of tossing homeless man's belongings into Lake Merritt has bail set at $55,000. Remember, it was $100,000 before court, apparently $55,000 after. This is by Thomas Peel and David DeBolt. "A man who gained instant notoriety after he was caught on video throwing a homeless man's belongings into Lake Merritt last week was deemed a threat to safety by a Superior Court judge who set his bail on robbery charges at $55,000, even as his lawyer asked for leniency. Henry William Sinte, a.k.a. hashtag Jogger Joe, was catapulted into Twitter infamy when, on a run around the lake Friday, stopped near the column at the northeast shore and started scooping up food, clothing, and other items belonging to Greg Markson and tossing them into the water over protests by passersby. A video of him went viral, even the BBC reported on them, asking if anyone knew who he was. The next day, he grabbed the cell phone of a man asking him about Markson's things. Sinte turned himself into the police Monday and confessed to taking the phone, according to court documents. Although he was charged with second-degree robbery, but not with taking Markson's belongings, Superior Court Judge Mark McCannon said both incidents factored into his decision to not release Sinte out of jail without bail. "The actions of Henry William Sinte of Oakland tell me he is a threat to safety," McCannon said during a brief hearing Wednesday afternoon. "I have two members of this community Mr. Sinte has mistreated," McCannon said. Sinte's public defender, Shalana Cleveland, said in court that her client had received death threats since the video went viral. "Sinte has been a transient himself and had tried to help Markson in the past," she said. Friends of Markson have started a GoFundMe drive to support him. It had raised nearly $16,000 by Wednesday afternoon. The cell phone incident occurred Saturday as Sinte was seen fishing some of Markson's things out of the lake. An Oakland man, Matt Nelson, asked Sinte why he disturbed Markson's campsite, streaming video of the conversation on Facebook Live. When Sinte suddenly grabbed his phone, apparently unaware that the encounter was being broadcast live on social media. Cleveland said that because he had received threats, Sinte was fearful when Nelson and others approached him asking questions. What goes on in his mind is that he is in jeopardy, she told the judge. She also said he grabbed the phone with the intention of deleting the video because he didn't want it on the internet. It is not his first legal problem. Court records show Sinte was convicted in Riverside County in 2009 of transporting and selling marijuana and sentenced to 3 years probation. Big deal. He pleaded no contest to an unspecified drug felony in Lake County in May of last year. Big deal. And had previous legal cases in San Diego County, records show. According to two of his neighbors, Sinte lives modestly in the ground floor apartment of a house on East 27th Street near Highland Hospital. A sign that read, "Hippies use back door," hung on the apartment door Wednesday. Sinte's Facebook profile says he also lives in Lower Lake in Lake County. Maurice Morton, who lives next door, said he often sees Sinte hauling items in a truck and sometimes parking multiple cars on the street. "He's a nice guy. I don't know anything bad about him," Morton said. Another neighbor who did not want to be identified said Sinte had lived there for at least 8 months, comes and goes a lot, back and forth to Northern California. "What happened at Lake Merritt was unfortunate, but I didn't know it was Henry. Henry is okay with us," the neighbor said. The neighborhood also said she understood the frustration over homeless camps and trash. "It's frustrating that nothing seems to change. It only gets worse," the neighbor said, "but that's the politics of this town." Markson was not at his usual spot at the lake Wednesday afternoon, but his belongings, pillows, toilet paper, sleeping bags, boxes of crackers, were piled up there. A woman stopped briefly and took several bottles of water from Markson's belongings. A man walking a dog around the lake said he has no problem with homeless people there or anywhere else. "I think the homeless should be able to sit wherever they want," Gustavo Campos said. "It's horrible how we treat the homeless." So I guess you might say wrong again for me. I had thought that there was some... First I thought it was a straight case of homeless harassment. Then I thought I picked up from these stories that the guy who is now in jail, Sinte, knew the homeless man and it was trying to help him retrieve the belongings from the lake or some such thing, or doing it for him. But it sounds like both these stories, when they're read through line by line, it was a case of harassment of a homeless person. And in a rare situation, because of the video, there's some kind of consequence for it, assuming that things are as I've stated them and as these newspaper accounts seem to indicate. It points to the importance of video, and I encourage folks to, if you have video capable equipment with you, even if it's just a crummy old cell phone, use it when you see that happening, when you see police harassing people, or what looks like could be harassment, or when you see individuals harassing other individuals, video it. It can deter it. Admittedly, I admit there's some risk involved. I think it's particularly important to video officials in authority doing this kind of stuff. So I believe there's a video, for instance, of this entire protest that happened where the conversation with Carol Skurich took place, which probably wasn't video worthy. But I think it's now posted online at Wes White's site, which is John, and then the words Doe 13K, capital D-O-E, and then the number 13K, all one word, on YouTube. And you should be able to find his videos. I've had some trouble with that, but hopefully you won't. He's also under Monterey County Homeless Advocates. And I will have a report from Wes, or at least some clips from the video he took at the both the city council meeting of Tuesday, the city council meeting in Salinas, and the community meeting that he helped organize the day before the city council meeting to fight the ban on RVs in Salinas, which unfortunately passed, but it passed narrowly, according to the phone report I received from Wes White, 3-4. And so we'll be hearing some more about that. On Sunday, I'll also be playing some commentary on the special session of our own Santa Cruz City Council study session, which involved parking fees, but also the movement of the library from its current location to the to a parking structure to be built on the corpse of the current farmers market site. At least that's how I would describe it. And we're going to have more as well. But right now what I'm going to play is some words from Mike Rhodes, who I caught by phone in Fresno, California. And he gives us an update on what's going there, both with him and with the Fresno scene. So, well, today is Monday, the 18th of June, 2018, and I'm on the line with a writer and community activist from Fresno, Mike Rhodes, who I haven't talked to for a while. Hi, Mike.
Hey, Robert, how are you doing?
I'm not bad. Now, I understand health problems have kind of kept you a bit indoors or maybe less active in some areas than others, but I still regard you as a trusted source. I'm not sure why I do, but I do over the years in Fresno.
Well, maybe because we've talked for like over 10 years.
Yeah, we go on and on. And you and others have created some historic actions in terms of legal actions by documenting and then getting attorneys to pay attention to the seizure of homeless property in the Kincaid case and follow-up cases that have, I guess to some extent expired, although the ACLU and other organizations are still trying to operate around those. We've talked about the follow-up around that, which is where homeless people have encampments and they are supposedly or were protected to some extent supposedly from being run off from under the freeways, but of course they got run off anyway. What's the latest on all that?
Well, yes, you're correct. The settlement in that class action lawsuit, which was back in 2007, it really did push the city of Fresno back for a while. They changed their policies. They were not taking and destroying homeless people's property. But, you know, they're resilient. They bounced right back, and they figured out new ways to harass the homeless and get some of their political friends some money so that they could contribute that back to their political campaigns through Housing First. And what I'm referring to there, of course, is the Renaissance at Santa Clara that was built to house the homeless, but the contract was given to one of the big developers in town who was a political ally of the mayor at the time, and he got a $1 million contract. All he had to do was consult on this. He didn't build anything. He didn't house any homeless people. He just, like, pulled all the pieces together. And for that, he was rewarded very handsomely. And then he turned around and contributed that money to the mayor's campaign, which she ran for controller. And other people in his office gave her money when she ran for mayor. So it's a very friendly little group that we have here in Fresno at the upper echelon that know how to take care of each other. But that was a while ago. And so since then, what's happened is that they set up a operation with police department. So instead of funding somebody who would help the homeless, they plowed the money into the police and set up a department that only focuses on the homeless. It's the homeless task force. And what they see their job as being is to go out in areas where there are a lot of homeless, which is just about every place in Fresno these days. And, you know, they do get to know people. They know each person. They probably have a file on each person. And they know their background, their criminal history, and they, you know what to expect when they encounter them. And they have a carrot and stick. They will say, if you want to get off the street, we can help you get enrolled in a program, whatever that program may be. And if not, then you need to move on. And if you leave your property for any length of time at all, it's likely to get confiscated and put into storage and then destroyed 90 days later. And the way they could destroy homeless people's property now is different than they did before. Before, they would just go down with a bulldozer and garbage trucks, and the bulldozers would pick their property up and throw it in the back of a bulldozer and crush it. Today, it's a little different. They find somebody who's, say, gone into the Poverello House, which is a place where homeless people get a meal or dental care or something. But they, the Poverello House doesn't allow them to bring their property into the facility. So they have to leave it on the other side of the fence. Well, anybody who leaves their property there, it's going to get confiscated by the police calling out the sanitation department, and then they haul it away. Same thing if they go to the library. They can't take it into the library. So if it's sitting outside, it gets taken away, stored for a short time, and then destroyed. You simply cannot avoid leaving your property at some point during the day. You're going to go into a building and eat or use a restroom. And when you do that, then the police presence is such that they will note that and they will call sanitation. Sanitation will haul people's property away, and that's how it's done today.
Now, is there, Mike, a lot of homeless on homeless theft? That's been noted here in Santa Cruz a lot. The police have, to some extent, backed off on seizing homeless property, either through the Rangers, through the cops, through First Alarm, or through, I guess, the hosts have not returned yet. They're calling themselves the ambassadors, I think, when they come back in January. Woo-woo. You know, these are, you know, sort of a private downtown association-funded security group. But there's a lot of supposed homeless-on-homeless theft. Is that happening much in Fresno?
Oh, I think, you know, theft happens. I mean, it happens where I live in the neighborhood. I mean, there's the neighborhood watch group that's always posting on the Internet about, oh, you know, something happened here, something happened there, you know, you got to nail everything down, or people will haul it away. You know, yes, crime happens here. I'm sure there are the same dynamics happening in homeless encampments. Certainly I've heard stories, too, where people, and that's one of the things that I would say about having a permanent or semi-permanent place where people can live is that if you do have a place where you could live with neighbors that you know and trust, there's going to be less people coming by and stealing because, you know, you could leave things there and your neighbor could watch it. Whereas if you're just like being scattered to the wind every day and there's no stability, it's less likely you can have somebody look after your property when you go in to get a bite to eat.
And that's, in fact, what we discovered with the San Lorenzo campground when it was open this fall. It was created as sort of an emergency. Oops, hepatitis A is here. Better put in some wash stations and porta-potties and so forth. That survived for about 4 months. And also with the River Street campground, also known as the Boneyard Barbed Wire Campground, because it's surrounded by barbed wire, which succeeded the San Lorenzo campground. It was for a much smaller number of people on the outskirts of town. You weren't allowed to visit, and you weren't allowed to walk up to it. You had to be bussed in, you know, as a sort of a tip of the or obeisance to the neighbors who are afraid of these homeless coming and going and creating all kinds of so rather unspecified problems. But there's also a new program here, the Day and Night Storage Program, which was set up independently by activist Brent Adams and his Sanctuary Village / Warming Shelter program. Sanctuary Village hasn't materialized to some extent because of opposition or lack of cooperation with the city council and also other activists who have factional problems with Brent. But this day and night storage program has been going 3 weeks, which essentially involves Brent, with a truck and 80 bins inside the truck, where people can come during the morning, put their property in between 5 and 7, come back in the evening, actually between 7 and 9, come back in the evening between 5 and 7 and pick it up, or leave it there overnight so they can be around town without being, you know, having to carry their stuff and risk either losing it to theft or official police theft. And so it seems to be getting some praise, although the city council is either ignoring it or harassing it, although not to the extent that, for example, Food Not Bombs attempt to put in a porta potty when we did a porta potty protest last week because they're closing bathrooms, claiming that homeless people are abusing bathrooms and so forth at the Loudon Nelson Community Center. And when Keith McHenry of Food Not Bombs put in a purchased a porta potty or rented one for use at the town clock here at the center of Santa Cruz, right across from where Food Not Bomb serves, at which point Parks and Rec demanded it be moved, so he moved it across the street to where Public Works supposedly has. You can find more information about this, and listeners can find more information about this on Santa Cruz Indie Media, where there's a brief story and a picture of the porta potty, which I visited. Very clean. It's got a washing station. It's, you know, it has toilet paper, seat covers. It doesn't have a warmed toilet seat as the Santa Barbara mayor's bathroom had. I remember back in 1992 when we protested that there were no bathrooms open in Santa Cruz for homeless people, but that the mayor's father had a nice heated bathroom seat in his house. I was accused of being insensitive to the elderly with that particular one, and I suppose I was. But, you know, you've written a book about your experiences. Was it called Dispatches from the War Zone? Is that what it was called?
Yeah, that's right. Dispatches from the War Zone. That's a couple of years ago I printed that, and it was, you know, what had happened over the last 10 or 15 years in Fresno that I was aware of. And, you know, I mean, things continue to happen, and, you know, there could be several later chapters that could be added to the book.
And that's what I was going to ask you. What would you add to the book now if you were updating it?
Well,
other than what you've told me already, of course.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's so much. When I compiled the book, there was a lot that I included, which, you know, I think people like to hear the stories of the things that happened. And I think I was pretty good with that. There's a couple things that I would add. Well, obviously the things that have happened in Fresno since the book finished, because some of them were just starting to happen. The police task force had emerged, but it wasn't clear exactly how draconian they would be. So I would include more information about that. There have been a couple of other projects that have started up. You know, you're always going to have people like Keith McHenry, you know, who's always doing something right. And the other person you mentioned, was it Adam?
Brent Adams.
Who set up a project. Those sound like good projects. People here do the same thing. You know, one of them is a project that gets homeless people, once they get into housing, they oftentimes don't have all the things they need to run a household. So they deliver, you know, a couch or a bed and kitchen supplies, and, you know, they just set them up so that they have everything they need to be able to acclimate to a house. That's a good project. There's a project where they have housing in somebody's backyard, tents and small houses, which, again, is great. It's just not enough. And with the city acting as they do, I mean, my perspective, Robert, at this point is that if the city of Fresno were to just back off and do nothing, it would be a whole lot better than what they're doing right now, because they're actually making the situation worse. For a very little amount of money, they could do something like what you're saying Adam is doing and provide storage space for people. It would cost way less than, like, 5 full-time salaried police officers to go around and harass people. You could actually give homeless people a place to store their property. You could have large lots where homeless people could set up an encampment, and there could be portable toilets that they could use. You know, it's that's not the all you have to do to end homelessness, but it's a great start, and it's something you can do right away. You could start doing that tomorrow and vastly improve the lives of homeless people rather than just constantly figuring out ways to make their lives worse.
Now, it's interesting. In Santa Ana, you've probably been following it, in Orange County, a federal judge has intervened in a sort of a hands-on, feet-on-the-ground way to insist that authorities not merely send in the cops to drive everybody away from the riverbank and not only claim they're providing homeless services and shelter and all that stuff, but actually do it. And he's been inspecting the premises and demanding that cities that refuse to do this, who showed up, bust in their NIMBYs into the county board of supervisors and said, we don't want any shelters in our area. You know, you can't force us. He said, unless you do this, I will have to, you know, suspend ordinances that essentially criminalize people outside, which, of course, should be done anyway, no doubt.
Right.
But nonetheless, there's a recent story in the Orange County Register I'm looking at online from Saturday, I guess it is, claiming, well, it's not any kind of real solution because it's one of those, well, it's an all-year shelter, which is supposed to be a very big deal down in Orange County. Has there been any kind of either encampment discussion here in Santa Cruz? The rumor has it, and it's probably accurate, that the three-month limited encampment for 60 tents behind barbed wire, I've called it the barbed wire boneyard campground, which, you know, it has all the drawbacks that I've suggested, but it also has the advantage of you have your private tent, you have your privacy, they're running shuttles back and forth at every two-hour intervals to this campground. You get one meal a day. They store your stuff there during the day if you'd like, and also during the night. So it has some advantages for the few people, relatively few, I don't know, maybe 70 or 80 people who get into that compared to the 1,000 to 2,000 homeless in Santa Cruz who are out there, not necessarily all of them seeking that kind of a place, but a significant number wanting someplace to go, at least to be left alone. And, of course, their camps are being busted by supposedly liberal regime of Andy Mills and the Parks and Rec interim regime of Carol Skurich, who apparently doesn't feel that bathrooms are an essential part of the outdoors component, but that the homeless people are useful fertilizer for the grounds around Santa Cruz, to be sarcastic about it. So
yeah.
I guess campgrounds as proposed emergency shelter, they have nothing to do with housing, of course, but they do have to do with at least, and this is what you did, and you and activists in Fresno did for years once you had the Kincaid decision or settlement in place, which was you provided porta-potties and trash pickups through, you know, charity organization. You personally were involved in a lot of this, as I understand it, to the actual existing campgrounds. What is that either something that is contemplated by either activists or, I don't want to say government authorities, since we've kind of established that they're the opposite of that, but is anything like that being considered or acting or actually happening? Or are homeless people on their own, because they have to sleep somewhere, gathering in tent cities anyway and finding their own kind of community for however limited a period?
Well, there's a lot to contemplate there. I think that, you know, we're correct in assuming that the city and the county is not going to do any good. Whatever they're doing is making the problem worse. So I don't look to them, I don't lobby them to do anything that would be the right thing to do, because I just don't think that that's a good use of time. And they've shown a pattern over decades that their inclinations are to move in the wrong direction. It's just their instincts are like the opposite of what they should be. On the other hand, there are people who want to help, and you know they'll go out every day and they'll hand out water, bottles of water to people. They'll hand out food, clothing, sleeping bags, and set up. One person even, you know, bought a house and allowed people to camp in her backyard. Those are good things. It's just not enough. I mean, to have an impact, you need to have, a large body of people buying in to this.
Now, there's a poor...
Your question about whether that's happening here right now, I'd have to say no, not on any large scale. There are no large encampments anywhere. People disappear during the day. They go wherever they go, and then they will go back to certain areas at night, like around the Poverello House on the sidewalks and all over that area. They do set up the camps, and the police will not interfere with them from about the time it gets dark until the time it gets light. So, this time of the year is 8 or 9. They can start setting up their camp or their tent, and then they have to be gone by about 6 in the morning.
Now, is this a change from your experience of 10 years ago? In other words, is there less harassment at night than there was?
Less harassment by who?
At night by police than there was 10 years ago.
I don't know. I think the police have been pretty constant in their harassment of the homeless here. The only thing that's really changed is that they have a dedicated force to harass them. Now, they're always issuing citations for, if somebody walks across the street and they jaywalk, they'll give them a citation, then they'll have to show up. If they don't show up, then they have a warrant out for them. And then the next time they're stopped, they can be frisked and searched. So, it's this constant stream of harassment that they get from the police. I certainly don't think it's diminished.
So are warrants actually being issued for, non-appearance in court for infraction? Santa Cruz County abandoned that, I think, like about 12 years ago because they found it was just not cost-effective because people kept sleeping outside in spite of the fact that they got tickets. So, but and some other counties have also abandoned warrants. Instead, they're using an even, still vicious process whereby they will, if you don't show up in court, instead of, putting out a warrant for you, they will declare you guilty and charge you with failure to pay and then find you guilty of failure to pay and send that south to a collection agency where they'll add a $200 or $300 fine, which will then interfere with your credit, your driver's license, and possibly garnish your wages.
Yeah, that's what they do here, too. They've passed so many ordinances you can't, solicit from a median island. You can't push, a homeless person cannot push a shopping cart. The rich and the poor cannot sleep out on the street or sidewalk at night. There's camping. They've just implemented a camping ordinance. That was one of their newest things to do. All of which are just their tools to harass people, issue citations, and when people, as you say, don't show up for the hearing, then, they're slapped on. They have a larger fine. And they have a warrant out for them, so the next time they're stopped by the police, they are more vulnerable. And I think
so. They're both using warrants, and they're using both warrants and this additional failure to pay fine thing.
And they have arrested people for this camping ordinance. There was a guy that got arrested. It's been a month or two now, and he was just living outside the Poverello House. They told him to pack up and move, and he didn't move fast enough, so they arrested him. And then we have a video of it. They literally just threw all his property into the back of a dumpster, a garbage truck, and destroyed it. And because of my health issues that I've had, I haven't been able to physically go down and pursue these things. There are other people who, have presented that information to the attorneys that are working on the case, but I have not been able to get any confirmation that there's another lawsuit in the works. There should be.
That kind of brings me to my next question, part of it was about the lawsuit situation. Part of it was, one of them was about your health, but another one is this Poor People's Campaign, which you may have heard is, I think they did a demonstration in Fresno, I thought. Maybe not. I know they did one in Sacramento. They've done them in,
in Baltimore. It's a national campaign, and we have a local Huzzah Huzzah guy doing it here. He did it for Juneteenth, the celebration that happened this last Saturday. Huff is going to be considering, that's the organization I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, considering supporting it. I'm rather skeptical of it because I don't see them paying much attention either to homeless issues specifically. I wonder if they're just, sheepdogging for the Democratic Party for the 2018 elections is my concern.
It's probably different in different places. I mean, I know the people that are doing here are pretty authentic rabble-rousers. Ralphie Avedia, who is in the Brown Berets, he's the one who sent out the latest notice of a rally today, later today downtown Fresno, around the Poor People's Program. So, I know in Fresno the people that are working on it are grassroots activists. That it could be, the right wing of the Democratic Party doing it somewhere else, but I doubt it. They just don't seem that, the right wing of the Democratic Party do not seem that interested in poor people's issues.
Well, I don't know whether it's the right wing or the left wing, but if it's the Democratic Party, there are a lot of Bernie Sanders fans. Here we had a huge support for Bernie Sanders in 2016 or 2015 even. I've never seen such a long line of people lining up. They went all the way around from one bridge to another bridge in Santa Cruz. But, not the issues, of course, were completely ignored. And when Sanders jumps on board the war machine, as he has since, he said he was going to support Clinton no matter what happened anyway, if she was the victor, it doesn't seem to matter. So I guess what I'm wondering is, I don't care whether the right activists or the left activists in this case are doing this. Are they insisting that issues be focused on?
Yeah, yeah. That's well, at least in Fresno they are. I mean, it's people I've known for
what issues? What issues are they insisting be focused on?
Well, it's largely issues like police accountability, homelessness.
Are they specific about Fresno?
Quality.
Are they specific about Fresno police accountability and people that have been killed in Fresno? Are we talking the vague general, we would like to see more police accountability, blah, blah, blah?
No, no. These are often people who have been impacted by police aggression. Or their family have experienced death. There's a very active group on police accountability here, which is largely comprised of people who are in the Brown Beret and who are family members who have been impacted.
Right, but as part of the Poor People's Campaign, is that issue being raised, particularly about Fresno cop abuse, under the Poor People's Campaign label, or is it simply that these are people are involved who have been victimized, who've done perhaps other anti-police abuse rallies with other groups or with their own group, but when they come to the Poor People's Campaign, they are sliding into the rhetoric of whatever the PPC is saying? That's what I'm wondering. So,
yeah, well, all I can do is to talk about the integrity of the people that are doing the organizing here, and I would say... Mm-hmm. These are good people, and they're concerned about the right issues, and they have the facts and the details about what has happened in Fresno on police abuse. And
are they speaking out about them? I guess is my issue. A lot of good people get involved in institutional structures that immediately destroys their integrity, even whatever their fucking intentions are. They really have good intentions, but they end up, compromising in order to go along with the national program.
Really,
you know?
That's really not what's happening here.
Good,
The people that I'm talking about, Robert, they get arrested at these demonstrations. The police have targeted them specifically because they're so militant about...
Right. The question I have is when the Poor People's Campaign does its rally today...
Yeah.
Will these issues come up, or will they just, for some reason, be overlooked as we talk about the importance of organizing for the national campaign and the great legacy of Martin Luther King and yada, 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 which I've heard endlessly, over the years, but doesn't get specific about the issues in the community? Now, I know that the Democrats have jumped on the issue of ICE, as they should, which is, of course, for those who are listening and don't know, that's immigration abuses. And, of course, the big thing is separating kids from the parents, you know, which I don't know if the actual specifics happened under Obama, but he massively escalated deportations. And you didn't hear a damn Democrat complaining about that, though I'm sure your brown berets probably did, you know.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you know, for sure. But the question is whether, to me, not whether your authentic activists complained then or are complaining now, but will they do so under the rubric of the Poor People's Campaign? I guess what I need to do is get a report from you later as to whether that happened. You can tell me, well, you know, they did or they didn't. So
I could give you Ralphie's phone number, and you can talk to him directly.
That sounds good. I may do
one
that.
One of the main organizers.
We're talking with Mike Rhodes, who is an author, community activist, I don't know, long-time on the scene documenter of homeless abuses, liaison with legal forces there, who have actually successfully, for a time, at least gotten $2.3 million out of the city. I suppose that's a drop in the bucket over the long term, but still, it's certainly more than we've done in Santa Cruz, that's for damn sure. Anything else you want to add to this, Mike? I was supposed to be a 15-minute interview, and here we are, I don't know, half an hour or 45 minutes, as usual.
Yeah, as usual. No, I don't have anything, you know, specific that I need to talk about other than, you know, work continues to be done. You know, one of the things that I've learned after doing all this work for as long as I have is you will have victories, like the lawsuit against the city, and that can cause some structural change, but you can't take your eye off the ball, because the forces that are in government that are trying to carry out their policies of abuse towards the homeless, they are getting paid, and oftentimes paid overtime, to come up with new ways to harass people. And so you can't, like, oh, well, we won. Because there is no we want. It's that you've always got to be vigilant about the next thing that's coming down the road. So that's all that I wanted to say about what I've learned over the years of doing this work is, you know, this is not a 50-yard dash. This is a long-distance run.
Sure. Unfortunately, that struggle continues, as they say. Continues. So I'm going to be talking to you off audio on, give me a few numbers of people that I can harass or contact.
Yeah, okay.
Hopefully, simply,
sure.
You know, get some more information from. And I guess also, last time we talked, or that I heard from you by email, you had a year left to live, and I'm wondering if that's still the case, if we should all kind of, we've got questions, we better hustle in to get those questions answered fast before you disappear from the scene.
Well, just you know, mention briefly what happened is I got diagnosed with lung cancer, fourth stage, which means it spread to, you know, bones and lymph nodes in my brain, and you know, it was pretty bad news, and I didn't get any good news for a while, but yeah, at this point. Which is 6 months later. That was in January of this year that I got diagnosed. I've been through a lot of treatments, both radiation and some immunotherapy. I would say that I'm doing considerably better. Are you still there, Robert?
I am. I mean, I'm impressed. I mean, you've done fine during this interview. You do. I mean, I'm exhausted half the time myself, so I'm afraid you're way ahead of me, lung cancer man. So.
Yeah, well, it sucks, but, you know, look, life, everybody is going to pass away at some point, and it's given me an opportunity to reflect on my life, to realize what a good life I've had, and that, you know, while I would like to live longer, and I think I might, because some of these treatments are having a positive impact, you know, it's not certain. So, you know, having a limited time to live kind of puts your life in perspective and gives you the chance to kind of, like, you know, go back and look at things and say, well, am I happy with my life? Did I live well? And in my situation. I feel very good about my life. I even have written, a small book about what I've done that I could share with family and friends. So
I want a copy.
I couldn't be happier about the situation that I'm in right now. The last thing that happened last Wednesday is that I had an MRI of my brain, and the results came back that all the little specks of cancer they saw in my brain has gone away. It doesn't mean that it's entirely gone, but, you know, they don't see anything. So that's as good as it could get. And I feel good. I have no pain, and I'm looking forward to whatever time I have left.
Hmm. Well, then I'm not going to feel any sympathy for you there, Mike.
Well, I don't want any.
I know. I hear you.
I just, want to continue doing good work and, having the rest of my life be what I intentionally make it to be. So I hopefully will be talking to you for years to come.
Yeah,
but I can't guarantee that. Actually, nobody can guarantee that they're going to be around a year from now or 5 years from now. I'm in the fortunate situation to know, that I have been, told that I only have so long to live, but actually things happen and people do turn around, and it's possible that I could live for quite a while longer.
Plus, you know that if you don't use it, you're going to lose it, so you tend to use it with more intensity and more clarity, I guess, than you might.
Well, it does focus the mind.
Yeah, so for those who want more information about Fresno homeless situations, any suggestion where they can go for updates, since probably you're not tromping the streets as much as you used to? So.
Yeah, I'm not. Let's see. Indy Media will have information, the Central Valley page, if something big happens. You can go to my website, which is my name, Mike Rhodes, MikeRhodes.us, and you could see my health blog there, but you could also see other information about the homeless situation in Fresno.
Now, did you post your personal kind of reflections that you mentioned before on that website, or should we attempt to get them through private communications with you?
So I'm still working on it, Robert. It's a work in progress, and I'm giving my family a chance to read through it first to make sure, because sometimes, even though you live through a period of time and things happen, sometimes you remember it differently than other people did.
Oh, yeah.
So I want to try to make this as accurate as I can, and I'm not doing it to kind of settle scores with anybody. It's mostly just an interesting story about my life growing up in Fresno and working for social and economic justice for the last, since the 1969 and 1970. And that spans quite a long period, lots of interesting things that have happened. And, I'll let you know when it's ready.
Hey. Thank you, Mike. I think that sums it up for me, or at least I'm going to move on, I guess, to the next thing. And
All righty then.
Thank you. Talk to you again. Call me when you want.
Okay, Robert. Take care. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And that's it for this edition of Bathrobes, Beers, Broadsides. Come on back on Sunday, or if you want to join some of the protests, check them out Saturday noon at the post office, or join us at the Sub Rosa at 10:30 on Friday. That'll be tomorrow, I guess. And learn more. Oh, of course, there'll be next Thursday. You can talk to the head of the city himself, Martin Bernal, or maybe we'll be talking at his closed office door. Who can tell? Thanks for listening in.
Good evening, my friends. Afternoon and day. This is R. Duck here, asking you to help us find a new studio location. $500 to the one that can provide. If you know such a spot, it needs, a bathroom, electricity, ability to connect internet and telephone, dry would be nice. We all thank you in advance for your support.